Welcome to Subway Sports Talk.
Dan, clear of the closing doors, please.
Oh, the Knicks are cooked. The Knicks are done. They're too tired. They're too injured. They're screwed in this series, is what everybody was saying entering Game 5 after an embarrassing loss on Mother's Day. But what do the Knicks do? Like they've done all year, is fight tooth and nail, never giving up, never expecting to roll over. And they show up and get a 40-plus point performance from Jalen Brunson, a million offensive rebounds from Isaiah Hartenstein, a great off-the-bench performance from one Alec Burks, who somebody, maybe me, who I don't know, has been clamoring for a few weeks now. And here we are, with the series back in hand for the New York Knicks, up 3-2, going into Indiana on a Friday night with two full days off of rest, with a chance to close the series in six, like some people, we're not saying who, predicted before the series started. A series is not a series until someone wins on the road. So you can argue this series hasn't just started yet. But here we are, just a few moments after the Knicks close out the Indiana Pacers 121-91, after so many people, local and not local alike, were burying the New York Knicks. Subway Sports Talk, P. Kennedy, right here on your podcast app, on YouTube, on socials at Subway Sports Talk. You know what it is. I didn't even have time for that coming into this episode, because right here, right now, the New York Knicks are live. The New York Knicks are back where they belong with a chance to close out this series. And again, I have to keep reiterating, I didn't understand it before the game. And if you don't believe me, check the socials. I got receipts. I didn't understand it during the game in the beginning portion there, that people didn't think this Knicks team would show up again. You think the team that has just fought all year long was going to roll over? You think Jalen Brunson, who's put up amazing performance after amazing performance this playoff, wasn't going to continue to push the hurt foot and put up numbers again? To me, it didn't make any sense. People are burying the Knicks. And the key point to this whole exercise that I put forward on my social media at Subway Sports Talk, TikTok, Instagram, all the whole nine, YouTube Shorts. People overreact like crazy in these playoff series. It's unbelievable. Ryan Russillo said it on the Bill Simmons podcast they record every Sunday night, one of the best pieces of media during basketball season. It's incredible. But Russillo said it as like a half joke, half serious line to Bill Simmons. Like, is this your first time doing this? Is this your first time? Not to Bill, just in general. Is this your first time watching an NBA series? Because that's what it feels like after a blowout in this playoffs. I mean, let alone the Denver Nuggets and Minnesota Timberwolves, who are playing as we speak right now, or as I speak right now, not as you're listening to this. When it was a 2-0 series in the Timberwolves lead, you think that the MVP and the defending champs are not going to come back with a battle? The series is over. They're going to sweep the Nuggets. The Knicks lose a game by 30 or 40 points, whatever it was on Mother's Day, and they're not going to show back up in their home court? It happens all year long, or I should say all playoffs long. Even when the Knicks lose in Madison Square Garden to the Philadelphia 76ers in Game 5, that's it. The Sixers have completed the comeback, apparently. There's no chance they can go ahead and win in Game 6 and fight like they fought the entire time. People overreact constantly. It's like it's the first playoff series that we've ever seen. And I just don't understand it. I'm trying to help some people out there who just don't understand how this stuff breaks down, because it happens all the time. In the playoffs, especially in the NBA, with the way three-pointers go, even a game that's down to the wire could be a 9-point blowout, quote-unquote blowout, right? Like, it can be close until 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes left, and you could lose by double digits. That's how this NBA works. And the Knicks got run out the gym on Sunday. It was absolutely nerve-wracking. It was absolutely a cause for concern. But to think that they wouldn't show up back in Madison Square Garden and put their best foot forward. Now, did I expect them to win by 30? No, obviously not. Did I have nerves going into the game? Absolutely. But I absolutely expected the Knicks team to win. I absolutely expected Jalen Brunson to show up again. And here we are, right back at it, going to Indiana, game six, Friday night. Again, overreaction. It's dumb in the NBA playoffs. Yeah, of course, you want to shoot your shot. Team goes up early, game one, game two, and you want to say this series is done. Knock yourselves out. 9 times out of 10 in a series that's evenly matched, it's not going to break down that way. We're not talking about the Celtics as a one seed going up against the Heat without Jimmy Butler when they win game two shooting 1,000,000% from three. That's a different scenario. We're looking at two teams who are pretty evenly matched at this point in time due to the injuries. We're looking at two teams who are competing at a high level with high energy every single night, and we're just thinking it's over? We're thinking the Knicks are burying, they're going to roll over, they're going to just be done for the series? I don't get it. And now to make sure I'm going full circle on this whole overreaction concept here, this series is not over. No road team has won a game yet in this series. The Knicks have to go to Indiana. It has not been kind to them just yet. They almost won in game three. They had a chance. They let it slip away. A few late mistakes, a couple of calls that didn't go their way. Maybe a couple bad plays by them, a couple of good plays by the Pacers. We all know Nembhard's three. That was a bit of a prayer. Dropped, took the lead, and it was over, right? That game was winnable. And they get blown out in game four. Okay, but we're not going to overreact. We can go into Indiana here on Friday night and watch our Knicks struggle again. We could watch them lose the game. Does that mean the Knicks are buried? Does that mean they don't have a chance in game seven? Absolutely not. It's not how the NBA works, people. It's not how playoffs work. Now, maybe we're just so accustomed now to the NFL being the big bad, the king of sports, which it is, so by all regards, when it's one and done in the playoffs, and you see a team get blown out in the playoffs, then yes, it is over. But that's not how it works in the NBA. It's not how it works in baseball. Momentum's absolutely a thing. I'm not one of those guys that says momentum does not exist. Of course it exists. But game to game, it can change. You can come out with a completely different strategy, different game plan, different energy, and change the script. It happened here in Game 5. It happened last series when the Knicks went into Philadelphia in Game 6 and took it home. My pre-series prediction for the Indiana Pacers was Knicks in 6. I'm lucky enough to stick to it. I'm lucky enough to have the chance to be right. But just because the Pacers blew us out on Sunday didn't mean the Knicks were going to roll over on Tuesday. And just because the Knicks blew out the Pacers on Tuesday does not mean their Pacers are going to roll over on Friday. It's going to be another battle. It's going to be another war. It's not going to be easy. And we're going to get into some specifics from this game and some of the things we like, but I thought it was very important to break that down for you guys because I'm sick and tired of people out here, Knicks fans, not Knicks fans, national media, local media, haters, lovers, everybody. Some of my most optimistic friends who are fans of this team thinking they're done. Have we watched the same team this year? Unbelievable. And now I got to shout out my guy, Chris Mule, friend of the show, former host of the show, Chris Mule. Shout out. I know he's listening right now. He's one of the only guys in my mind right now who sticks out that I talked to before the game and said, let's go. The Knicks are right here. They're going to show up. I'm ready. Him and I both texted 8 o'clock on the dot. You ready for this? Yes, let's go. We're live. All these other Knicks fans in my life, all these non-Knicks fans in my life, oh, they're cooked. The injuries are catching up. The minutes from Tibbs are catching up. It's not. Not with this team, not with this squad, not with the way that they play the game. Because if the minutes are catching up, Isaiah Hartenstein wouldn't have had 400 offensive rebounds. Josh Hart wouldn't have been going coast to coast the way he did. Brunson wouldn't have handled every single guy they threw at him. Nembhard, Nesmith, McConnell, doesn't matter. 44. There's a lot of Knicks fans out there who understood the team that they watched all year did not go away after one bad loss. And here we are with a chance to win it in game six. Let's talk about some of the stuff that did go well from a strategy perspective, from a player perspective here in game five, because it's important. It's important to note. And again, I'm keeping receipts here too, folks. Go ahead, check the socials. Who did I call for to get a major berm after the OG Anunoby injury? It's Alec Burks. And Alec Burks showed up again. It didn't feel as impressive because they lost game 3 and 4. It didn't feel as important that he hit a couple shots. But guess what? In this game, in crunch time, but in matters, moments that mattered, Alec Burks was not scared. He shot the ball with confidence. He attacked the rim when he had to. He made the right play. And Alec Burks off the bench became an integral part to this team. In a game that Dante DiVincenzo was 0-for-6 from 3. Did some other great things. Rebounded the offensive rebound putback. We saw that. It was a sick momentum swinger. It was an awesome moment for the Knicks. But he largely was absent from the offense. 4-for-14, 0-for-6 from 3. You need someone to shoot the ball. And Alec Burks delivered. The Knicks only made 12 threes, 34%, 12 of 35. Alec Burks, 5-for-8, 18 points. I mean, this is a guy who, from the get-go, as his time in New York started this season, is a guy known to get off shots, a guy who can hit, a guy who can create, and a guy who can get hot. And frankly, for him and Bojan Bogdanović, I think it was incredibly difficult for them coming from Detroit, where they were getting whatever they wanted, where they were getting all the looks, all the minutes, all the burn, to come into New York to get between 8 and 18 minutes a game. It's difficult, man. That's tough. You're used to having the ball in your hands. You're used to doing whatever you want. You're used to things not mattering. Another thing, in Detroit, nothing mattered, man. It was Cade Cunningham, Bojan, and Burks. Those are the only three people who touched the ball in Detroit to do anything. Right? They had everything at their fingertips from a standpoint of a chance to score the ball or make plays. And then they join a New York Knicks team with Brunson on a top five MVP run, with Dante DiVincenzo shooting the lights out, with OG, who was in and out of the lineup, but being an important part of that lineup, with Josh Hart being a huge part and a huge connector of that offense. And then it was like, hey, Bojan, come in for 15 minutes and shoot 5-for-8 from 3. Hey, Burks, come on in and create three opportunities for us in 6 minutes. Like, it never clicked for them. But in this playoff, for me at least, it was so obvious that you had to give him a chance to shine. When this offense looks bad, it looks bad. When Brunson's not out there, they're clamoring for playmaking opportunities. And Brunson played 43 minutes in this game, even in a blowout. So obviously he was out there for the most of it. But it was so difficult for them to find good looks when Brunson wasn't creating for them that, to me, I was like, you have to run Burks out there. You have to give him a chance to create something. Because, again, and I go back to this thing with Bojan and Burks. I know Bojan's out, but it's the same concept because they're similar enough players. You have to really read the body language and the actions of the Knicks players on the court with those two guys. Just watch them. Right? When Burks and Bojan were on the court, all the other Knicks not named Jalen Brunson consistently were looking for Burks and Bojan to make things happen. To me, that was everything I needed to know. Their shots were not falling. Their percentages were trash. Excuse me. Their percentages were trash and they weren't getting the job done. But the way the Knicks players acted around Bojan and Burks, it told me everything I needed to know, that they are looking into those guys to make plays. They are relying on those guys to be creators. And Alec Burks delivered now for the third game in a row, a solid, consistent, good offensive performance. You know, you could argue about his defense, and some Knicks fans will do that. Oh, he's not always in the right spots on defense. He's too aggressive. He's too jumpy. He's not taking care of business. Okay, I get it. Maybe he's not the perfect defensive player. That's probably why Tibbs didn't rely on him too much when he first got traded to the team. But when the strengths of this team is already defense, when you have plus defenders in Isaiah Hartenstein, Miles McBride, Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, even Precious Achiuwa, who's a decent defender with good size, you can afford to keep Alec Burks out there, who is a veteran, who knows what he should be doing, even if he's not great at it defensively, to help out with the other stuff. And I'm taking a little bit of a victory lap here because I felt like I was on an island, people. I felt like I was one of the only people out here saying, Tibbs, can we give Alec Burks a look? Can we give him a shot? All it takes is a few to go down. And all of a sudden, we're looking at a 14-point-per-game guy. And right now, the way this offense is made up, you absolutely need it. Like, if you think about Dante DiVincenzo being that secondary scorer right now for the New York Knicks and how important he is to the Knicks' success offensively. Like, he is not good enough. He's not high echelon enough to just be, you know, chalked up for 24 points per game. He's just not that guy. He's an amazing player. He's done wonderful things here in New York. He can score 25. He can score 30. We know this. But you cannot rely on him to create and find his own shot. You cannot rely on him to hit six threes every single game. And a game like this one, game five against Indiana, it really was the culmination of a full team performance. I know all the shine's going to go on Jalen Brunson, 44.7 assists, 18 of 35 from the field. But if you don't have Alec Burks hitting some of those key threes that stop the momentum in its tracks for Indiana, you don't have him hitting some of those shots when they swing the ball to him in the corner. This game, you know, it probably still goes in Knicks' favor because McBride and Hart and Hartenstein and Brunson obviously did so well. But his presence offensively is so important. His ability to shoot the basketball off the catch, off the dribble is so important. So he deserves his flowers. Now on to Jalen Brunson, who should lead the show. But listen, we get it. Everyone's talking about Jalen Brunson. So let me do my two cents here as well. Jalen Brunson struggled in game four. Jalen Brunson did not have his best performances in Indiana. We saw it. We thought the foot was a little injured. He averaged, in Indiana, he had 26 points, which is a fine performance, but it was on 38% field goal percentage. So really not his best game, 10 for 26. In game four, only 18 points, obviously in a blowout. He only played 31 minutes, which is hysterical that we say only 31 minutes, because for most people, that's a lot of minutes. Even in game three, where they did win the game, he obviously missed a quarter, and he shot 11 of 18, which is a wonderful percentage, but he scored 29. And people are starting to say, now the foot's catching up to him. He doesn't have the lift. He doesn't have the juice. And what does he do? He comes out here 51% from the field goal, 44 points, 6 of 7 from the free throw line, when free throws have been a slight issue for him over the series a little bit. I mean, he shot 66%, 57%, and 66% from the free throw line in the previous three games after going 14 for 14 in game one. But he showed up again. He cooked at every turn again. And this night, with Aaron Nesmith obviously being the best defensive matchup the Pacers have to throw at Brunson, it didn't even matter. Yeah, he had more success against Nembhard. Yeah, he had decent success against TJ McConnell tonight, which was nice. But Aaron Nesmith has been on him the most to the most effectiveness. And in game five here, they found ways to get him involved. And there's another thing, whether it's Brunson just doing this on his own or if it is Tom Thibodeau, who obviously deserves credit as well, they were doing different things to get him the ball. I think one of the most frustrating things for us Knicks fans when we're watching this offense struggle is it's Brunson at the top of the key, it's maybe a pick and roll, and now Brunson go do the thing. In this game, when Brunson gets past half court, or if Hart brings it up, or if McBride brought it up, they're keeping the ball up on the wing or up at the top of the key, and Brunson's getting in the paint and running off screens to get the ball with a little bit better of a situation at hand. He's catching the ball at the three-point line instead of 5 feet behind the three-point line. That was a little adjustment that I noticed, especially in the second half there, that was huge. Because when Nesmith is riding him 90 feet up and down the court, it's wearing on Jalen Brunson to bring the ball up, to get past half court, to now have 15 seconds left on the shot clock and figure it out. But what they did with that adjustment, getting him the ball in different spots, was such a breath of fresh air. And I say it occasionally when I'm watching it. I'm like, dude, get rid of the ball. You're going to get it back. Get rid of the ball. Right? You see the best players do this so well. Steph Curry, obviously the first one that comes to mind, how he gives it up, moves, and gets it back. It really, like, to me, it makes so much sense for these star players to do so because you're going to get it back. If you're worried about not getting your shots up, man, the Knicks are giving you the ball back, Jalen, right? So them making that adjustment, getting him the ball in better spots, getting him closer to the three-point line instead of him starting, you know, all the way back by the half court mark or by the logo, it made a huge difference in how he can get to his spots. And the shot making was there. He finished around the rim, the floaters, the fadeaways, the three pointers, only two of them, but they still dropped. It was a really just all around wonderful performance from Jalen Brunson. And large in part, it was due to the way they set him up, which is different from game three and game four. And I hope they continue that, because I think it makes his life a whole lot easier when he can catch the ball at a better spot. Now, the other guy to get the big shout out here is Isaiah Hartenstein. I mean, not only does he play incredible defense, he just kept so much pressure on the Indiana Pacers on the offensive glass. He had 12 offensive rebounds by himself. The Indiana Pacers had 5 offensive rebounds as a team. As a team. So, you know, Devo had 3 offensive boards. Precious had 2. Josh Hart had 2. McBride had 1. That out offensive rebound the Pacers with just those guys. And then Hartenstein nearly doubled it by himself. Actually, he did. He more than doubled it by himself. They only had 8 without him. They had 20 total. The energy that this guy played, he only played 31 minutes. It felt like he played 48, the way he was so active on the glass, the way he was consistently making the right plays. He also just is so consistent when he gets the ball in that free throw line area, making the right pass, putting the ball on the ground if he has to for one dribble, and taking a decent shot. Like, Hartenstein truly deserves a freaking award after the way he played here in game 5. The Knicks put together an all-around team performance, even on a night where Jalen Brunson's the star, where he deserves all the flowers, and scored 44 points in a tied 2-2 game 5. But these other guys showed up. Miles McBride showed up. Big time fast break opportunities, couple fast break points, a couple times where he caught the defense sleeping because they're looking at Brunson, and he said, oh, lane to the hoop, boom. Josh Hart, same thing. When he has those opportunities, he knows the defense is looking at Brunson twice, and he drives into the lane through contact, finishes the shot, made a couple free throws on his own too. This was a full-fledged performance from the New York Knicks. And on the defensive side of the ball, just incredible. I mean, you can talk about field goal percentages if you wanted to. The Pacers shot 44% from 3 in this loss. 44%. Pacers were hitting shots. Guess what? They weren't getting good shots. They weren't taking tough shots because they weren't getting the opportunity to. Stan Van Gundy pointed it out at one point. This team is known for scoring quickly. This team is known for not letting the shot clock get low and just attacking the rim, kicking out to shooters, and ripping threes. They didn't even have the chance. I mean, Miles Turner went on a mini run by himself. It actually wasn't mini at all. He had 3 threes in a row to start the second half, and all of a sudden the Knicks fans went. But the Knicks answered. The Knicks didn't allow some walk-up threes after that. We even saw, again, Ben Shepherd, seems like he doesn't miss. He did miss one finally, but I feel like he's shooting 80% from the corners in this series. He's absolutely crushing the Knicks when he's getting the chance to take those shots. But guess what? Again, didn't have the chance to take those shots. But the key moment here is Tyrese Haliburton. And just like we can say with Jalen Brunson, who was battling through a foot injury, you can argue Tyrese Haliburton is battling through his own injuries, and that's fair. I don't know if he's 100% right. He didn't seem to be moving gingerly throughout this game, but he played hesitant. And that's probably part due to the Knicks defense and how intense they played on the defensive side. But Tyrese Haliburton only took 9 shots. He took 9 shots. If you think about a player of his caliber, if you think about a player who is in the running for all NBA, a player who I as well, you know, we keep the receipts here. I chalked him up as the number one point guard in the Eastern Conference earlier this year before he got injured and kind of, you know, dropped off from a statistical standpoint. I was like, listen, the argument for Brunson is to be the second best point guard in the East right now because Haliburton has number one locked up. Well, at this point in time, and we'll hear about injuries in the offseason, I guess, at this point in time, it's not freaking close because there's no way you can be the best player in a conference at your position and get 9 shots up in a game of this magnitude. He played 34 minutes. He only had 5 assists, and he only took 9 shots. This is a guy who was raining threes at different points of the series. This is a guy who it seemed like when he had the ball in his hands, he was constantly making things happen for this team. And Siakam might be the leading scorer for the Pacers so far, but Tyrese Haliburton, I mean, in other games so far this year, he in the series, he took 10 threes in game 4. He took 16 threes in game three. He took 11 in game two. He took 9 shots total in game five. That's unheard of. He shot 55% from the field. It didn't matter. He didn't get shots up. He was unable to, the way the Knicks played defense. It really comes down to this for the Indiana Pacers in game five. If they weren't hitting some defensive breakdown, wide open threes, or some slick plays on their part, wide open threes, they had nothing going. It was Siakam with a little fadeaway post-up action or nothing. I mean, their entire starting lineup outside of Siakam hardly got shots up. Miles Turner got his fair share of threes. He had 7 three-point attempts. He hit 4 of them. Nembhard, 10 field goal attempts. Nesmith, 7 field goal attempts. Halliburton, 9 field goal attempts. That's a testament to the defense of the New York Knicks. It's a testament to forcing them to turn the ball over time and time again. Pacers, 18 turnovers. Knicks, only 9 turnovers. They almost 1-to-1 their assist-to-turnover ratio in a game. They had 24 assists as a team. They had 18 turnovers. It's terrible. And the whistle, which the refs were definitely willing to blow the damn whistle, man. My God, there were some points in that second quarter and in the second half there where it's like, come on. We've been letting these guys play all series. What are we doing here? On both sides. My friends kind of were talking that the Pacers were getting the favorable whistle. I don't know if I'd say that. I thought the whistle was relatively even and bad in both ways. But the Pacers absolutely were not getting an unfavorable whistle. There's no excuses from the Pacers this time that we're not going to get calls in Madison Square Garden. We're the small market team. We never get a chance. I think that's put to bed right now. I think that's absolutely not even a conversation point on Wednesday, which is a great thing. I hate to hear that, man. I'm sick of hearing about the referees, and they made it about themselves for a couple portions of this game, and the Knicks didn't care, just like they haven't cared this entire time. Even in games where the Knicks felt like they got screwed by the referees, what did they say after the game? Well, we made our mistakes. We got to be better. We're not putting the balance of the game in the referees' hands. It's not what the Knicks do. It's not what Brunson does. Brunson doesn't make excuses. Nothing about his foot. He's fine. If he's on the court, he's full go. Josh Hart maybe complained about a goaltend call. That's about it. Devo's not complaining. Now, do they do complaining on the court? Yes, everyone does. I mean, watch freaking Luka Doncic, watch Nikola Jokic, watch every star player in the league, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, flopping left and right. Everyone's doing that on the court. Everyone's complaining about the referees, but the Knicks have an emphasis. I don't know if it's spoken or unspoken, but after the games when they lose, they take accountability. After the games when they win, they do it humbly. And every single night, you know they're going to compete. It's what the Knicks have done all year, and they're clearly not stopping now. And this series is far from over, ladies and gentlemen. I said Knicks in 6 to start off this series. I'm sticking to it. Obviously, I made a take. I'm going to stick to it. But we keep our receipts, people. We're watching you out there. And I'm not even talking about Knicks haters. I'm talking about Knicks fans, too. Some Knicks fans out there saying, oh, and we're done. It was a good run. We're just too injured. We're unlucky. We can't hang. It's over. It ain't over. With this Knicks team, you can't say anything's over until it's over. Or they're down 40 on Mother's Day. It's what they do. New York Knicks up 3-2. Going to Indiana on Friday night. Friday night Knicks trying to close this thing out in 6. Chance to do it on the road court again. 2 series in a row. Closeout opportunity in game 6. I said it before game 5. Would you be shocked if Jalen Brunson went for 35-plus and this Knicks team showed up in MSG? Hopefully when you heard me say that, you said, you know what? I wouldn't be shocked. But some people were out there. You know who you are. And to everyone who was on the same side as me there, yeah, you know who they are. You can find them and say, ha, 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 ha. Y'all thought we were finished. Mm-mm-mm. Not finished yet. The Knicks are not done. They're up 3-2 with the series in the balance Friday night. Cannot wait for game 6. A huge one for a chance to play in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then we get to do this all over again. But I'll say this last thing before I say goodnight or good morning to you guys as you carry on through your day. It was nice to watch a Knicks game where we weren't ripping our hair out, freaking out in the fourth quarter, stressed out of our minds. Whew. First time this playoff in a win where we got to watch a fourth quarter relatively calmly. And to that, I say goodnight because I got to go to bed. Well, actually, I got to watch Tim Pool's Nuggets first because what am I going to not watch that? It's currently 43-39, 3 minutes left in the second quarter. So we'll see what happens there. Jokic is seemingly being a very active player, 14 points, 7 assists with 3 minutes left in the second quarter. He is live. We are out here. So here we go. Knicks, Friday night, let's go. Subway Sports Talk. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review on your podcast app. And seriously, I mean, if there's any time to do it, if you're listening to this podcast right now, I hope that you see some of the efforts that we've been putting in to this show, to all my counterparts out here who help host the show every single time they're on, the Pat Boyles, the Cody O'Connors, the Mike Dedinos, the Alec Argentos, the list goes on and on. So we appreciate you. And show that love and show that support by hitting the subscribe button, hit the review button, hit 5 stars, go on YouTube, hit subscribe, hit the notification bell. Even if you don't watch YouTube, I still appreciate you. But you could also see some fun content on YouTube Shorts, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Twitter, at Subway Sports Talk. We appreciate you. Spread the word for Subway Sports Talk. We're out here the rest of the Knicks playoffs, obviously. And, you know, baseball's going on. It's all good. It'll be here when the Knicks are done. So we'll get to baseball around the corner at some point. But right now it's Knicks, Knicks forever, New York forever. That's what the hashtag is on Twitter. And that's what I'll ride with right now. So thank y'all for listening. As always, we will be back with another episode possibly this week. I'm not 100% sure yet, but if not, we will obviously be back next week. And hopefully if we're back next week, we're talking about a preview of a series against Boston because this big one Friday night. Let's go. Subway Sports Talk. Thanks for listening. We will talk to y'all soon. Let's go, Knicks. Cheers.